Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. This is a special Purim edition with Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshei Emet Synagogue in Chicago talking with author Jonathan Eich about the eerie relevance of Purim on Saturday Night Live.
Happy Purim, almost. Chag Purim Sameach.
Same to you.
I got to imagine you've got your costume all planned out.
Yeah, I got a great costume and no place to go.
Exactly. It's so funny. Last Purim, we had a Purim carnival. And I remember sitting with the other members of our staff debating whether we should open this up. We shouldn't open this up. Should we have a Purim carnival? And actually, if we knew then what we know now, we would have for sure canceled it.
Right.
So the world's come a long way. We have like Purim for one or one family. And that's challenging.
One of the many things we've gotten used to this past year that we never imagined, never dreamed of.
That's for sure. And we did a thing on Sunday where we had a carnival in the parking lot of the synagogue where people drove through and donated food. And, you know, there were hundreds of cars that came through and it was really fun. But boy, what a statement that is about the times we're living in, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. We will be making all kinds of new traditions going forward, and hopefully they'll get better.
Well, I hope next Purim we'll be together. But yeah. One thing for sure is that the theme of Purim, which is the dangerous situation that Jews find themselves in, continues to this day. And anti-Semitism continues to rise. And the irony is that the state of Israel was actually supposed to be, at least in the minds of people like Theodor Herzl, was going to mark the end of anti-Semitism. They understood anti-Semitism as being a function of the diaspora. The Jews were living in an unnatural state in the larger world. And if they only had their own country, if they could only be normalized within their own space, then the world would accept Jews and anti-Semitism would simply go away.
Yeah, here we go. So we started out talking about parties and costumes, and you have to go and crash that party, Rabbi. Isn't that the way these things so often turn?
I become that relative in the family that always has to say that one thing that lets the air out of everyone's tires, so when they're all just relaxing. So thank you for that.
Right, and it's often Israel that does that.
Right. Well, let me see your statement and let me double down on it, because I'm gonna bring up last Saturday Night Live to actually underscore this idea that not only has Herzl's prophecy been seen to be limited, to say the least, but actually, in its own way, Israel is in some ways used to propagate old anti-Semitic tropes. I'll give you an example. Saturday Night Live last week, and Jan and I still watch parts of it. Truth be told, we sort of record it and fast forward through most of it, but watch the opening and then we watch the news segment. And the news segment is usually pretty funny. And Michael Che, his news piece was, so they show the map of the Middle East with a kind of COVID around Israel, and they say that Israel announced that half of its population has now received the vaccine. And then he paused and smiled and said, "I'm guessing that's the Jewish half." And there was like muffled laughter, but Jan and I looked at each other and just were stunned by it. And said, did he just say that? Did he just suggest or say basically that Jews were only inoculating other Jews and letting Arabs kind of, or Palestinians be subject to a disease and just leave them out there to COVID-19? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I didn't watch that, but hearing you describe it, that's unbelievably, like, you could never make a joke about that with another minority group, could you? Jews being the minority group that I'm referring to here, not the Palestinians in this case. It's horrifying. It's just such a blatant racist, anti-Semitic cheap shot. And you have to wonder, you know, what makes that acceptable to the writers in that room?
I think that's a very important way of framing it. What makes that acceptable? Especially when you have someone like Lorne Michaels, who is not only the founder of Saturday Night Live, but he's still the executive producer. Certainly, he was aware of the joke. And you know, humor is humor. There's an edginess to humor that, and it's a way of kind of taking it that next step, and there's shocking humor. And Jews are very much part of humor in America. In fact, I'm not sure humor in America would be humor in America without Jews. But yet there are lines, and once you've crossed them, then you have to take a step back and say, how do we get here? And I think this clearly crosses a line.
One thing that's interesting about it to me is that Michael Che is a minority, by the way, and the issue of whether minorities in the United States are being vaccinated at acceptable rates is a serious one. But in this case, he's kind of flipping Saturday Night Live. I shouldn't blame it all on Michael Che. They're kind of flipping the narrative here. And the reason the joke works, if you're the joke writer and you think the joke works, the reason the joke works is because you're not treating Israel and you're not treating Jews as a minority. You're treating them as the establishment in this joke. You're saying Israel is the power, and they're the equivalent of the white man in the segregated South, and that they have the power to deny vaccines to the minority group. So what's interesting here is that the attempt at humor is being made because they flipped the narrative and they've forgotten the Jews and Israel are minorities, and they're treating them as the white power here.
I think that's a large part of it. I have to take it one step further. The success of the vaccination program in Israel rightfully should be taking pride in the fact that they have just done a remarkable job in vaccinating the population. And every statistic shows that the number of hospitalizations for victims of COVID-19 have reduced sharply. So what should be a real success story and a feather in the kippah of the Jewish people is suddenly turned on its head and shown as a vicious anti-Semitic act, which, by the way, is patently false. And that doesn't mean that to say that the Arab population in Israel are not without its challenges and that there is a constant effort to do more, to do better. It's not to say that Gaza doesn't remain in perpetual human crisis or that the Palestinians on the West Bank don't suffer, because they do. And Israel has a part in this, and the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas and their corruption, the way that Hamas uses its population as human shields and as perpetual victims to put Israel in a negative light, also bear significant responsibility. But to say that this situation is complicated really strains the word complicated. And the Palestinians, through international law, control their own medical treatment. Israel did offer the vaccine. It was refused over a period of time. And in fact, the Israeli Arabs have been inoculated in levels that far exceed any other Arab country. And so it's not as though there isn't a backstory here. But to simply say that Jews only take care of Jews, Jews are only interested in Jews. And by the way, in the middle of a plague, the Jews are basically maybe not poisoning the well, but they're depriving other people around them of life-saving vaccine. It's the match that you're throwing against a gasoline can and wondering if it's going to start to burn and how badly. And I just think we have to look at the whole situation, but the normalization of anti-Semitism, this kind of easy way of saying, yes, Israel is an oppressive colonialist state, and it oppresses its minorities, and the world looks away, and, you know, we're calling it out. And, you know, it's a sense of humor, but we're calling this out, is something that is just, I think, reprehensible.
Well, I agree with you, of course. Since we're pushing each other here today a little bit, I'll push you a step further, and I'll play the unusual role for me of the optimist. And I will say that perhaps you are premature in dismissing Herzl's prophecy and saying that he got it wrong, because maybe it's still in play. Maybe the arc of history bends toward freedom, as Martin Luther King used to say, which he borrowed from an abolitionist. And if you look at the course of half a century or even a century sometimes, it's not enough to see which way the arc is bending. And I think if you look back over the century, you would say that the arc of history is bending toward freedom and away from anti-Semitism, and that the Jewish place in the world today is much more secure as a result. Anti-Semitism is far less today than it was a century ago as a result of the creation of Israel.
What gives me hope in America is the fact that anti-Semitism has never been under governmental auspices, which makes America qualitatively different than every European and Eastern European country, where anti-Semitism is part and parcel of government policy. It has never been part of government policy, and Jews have been protected again and again throughout American history. However, if you look at the new AJC study on anti-Semitism, I do recommend this to everyone. What we're seeing is that there has been a sharp increase in Jews not frequenting certain establishments where they think that that might be anti-Semitic, and also not wearing any sort of garment or jewelry that might point them out as Jews. What could be a kippah? It could be, I don't know, some Jewish piece of jewelry. And that to me is really alarming. And just one other point is that Jews pointing out anti-Semitic statements or an act being anti-Semitic to someone who may not understand anti-Semitism is generally not accepted well. In other words, you would think that in the same way that when people of color point out racism or microaggressions and white people say, you know, I need to really understand this differently, I need to go back and reflect, that same scenario doesn't seem to work when it comes to anti-Semitism. In other words, the statistics show that when Jews point out anti-Semitism, like, for instance, as they're doing, the AJC now has a petition on Facebook and online against Saturday Night Live to make a statement against this, that generally what will happen is that this is not going to be accepted. There's not going to be this moment say, gosh, you know, let's take a moment and reflect on this. And I didn't really fully appreciate what this statement about Israel meant. I'm not sure that that's what's going to happen. In fact, there likely will be a backlash against Jews, you know, wielding their power and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not as calm about this, I should say, as I have been in the past. I really am concerned about the normalization of anti-Semitism. So the fact that you have an anchor on the weekend news where millions and millions of Americans are used to poking fun, and since they're kind of a equal opportunity offender, everybody sort of says, well, you know, they said this about blacks, and they said this about Asian Americans, and they said this about the president, they said about, so they just make fun of everybody, and so just kind of calm down. I think that the humor here has dangerous overtones, if nothing more than it normalizes anti-Semitism, where this just becomes acceptable or accepted understanding. And wink, wink, nod, nod, you see, we get it.
Well, I certainly agree with you on all of that. And I would say that a lot of that has to do with the fact that we are at the same time a minority and we're seen as an oppressor. And that's an unusual role to be put in. And that's what makes some people think it's acceptable to make these jokes. But I don't think the backlash is any different for Jews and for Israelis than it is for other minority groups. You know, every time that any minority group has tried to rise and fight prejudice, there's been a backlash. And that's just the sad fact that these prejudices die hard and they have to be killed over and over. They keep coming back from the grave like zombies. And people are very reluctant to let go of their biases. They're baked in such a horrifying way that we just have to keep killing the zombie again and again.
It's like a cancer that never fully goes into remission. You know, it's just there and it's going to continue to be there. And Jews are going to continue to be targeted in their own way. Look, it's Purim. And come Thursday night, the only book of the Bible that takes place in the diaspora. And the Jews in this story, they're not going to Israel. So they're staying in the diaspora. They're not longing to go anywhere, it doesn't appear. And Mordechai and Esther are assimilated Jews. We know that from their names. Mordechai is Marduk. Esther is Ishtar. These are Persian gods. It's not as though they're, you know, it'd be like Jesus and Mary, you know, who happen to be Jewish. And she wakes up to the fact that her husband has made a deal with Haman to simply kill the Jews. And there's no moral outrage. There's no moment of questioning. It's a business deal. Haman's willing to pay him. And, you know, who cares? They're seen by the way, is by Haman as a fifth column. They don't follow your laws, King. You don't want these people here. And so it is basically a study in anti-Semitism. The terrifying part, Jonathan, is that this is a story that goes back to the fifth century of the Common Era, before the Common Era. So we're going back all the way to a Persian Jewish Scheherazade story with really chilling lessons about anti-Semitism for today. And basically the story is you can't let your guard down, and you have to stand up, and you have to be willing to fight the fight. And I think that there's no difference today.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. And if I'm going to try to be an optimist about the arc of history bending toward freedom, that's a pretty long arc you just gave me. You're right that it's not bending hard enough.
Well, I guess I would say it differently. We've talked about Dr. King, and we've talked about his anger at the end of his life. The fight doesn't end, right? It just continues on. There is progress that's been made. Certainly the Jewish community of 1945 in America that couldn't stand up to Roosevelt is a very different Jewish community. In the same way, the Black community, the people of color in this country are in a different situation than they were in 1965 in many, many ways. But the reality is that the fight goes on, and Jews need to be aware of their own fight and be willing to stand up and say, not only is it not funny, but it's utterly inappropriate and an apology should be issued. And I would, by the way, recommend that everyone go to the AJC website and sign this petition. So on that happy note,
party.
Sorry to play the role of that relative who always seems to bring the world down, but I think it's still a fitting conversation for Purim. Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Thanks, Rabbi.